So I guess the burning question there, Corey, the question that all of our listeners want to understand and know the answer to, the question that we have been dangling in front of them for 100 episodes now is, do you think that in the future, AI will keep us as pets?
It's a non-zero chance. I mean, it's not no.
The AI fix at Digital Zoo. Smart machines, what will they do? Flies to Mars or bake a bad cake? World domination, a silly mistake.
Hello and welcome to episode 100. That's right, episode 100 of the AI Fix, your weekly dive headfirst into the bizarre and sometimes mind-boggling world of artificial intelligence. My name's Mark Stockley and I am delighted that I am being joined today for the third time by Corey Knowles. Corey, you are the first guest host to appear on the AI Fix three times. How does it feel? And on the 100th episode.
I am super honored, man. It's a great show. Always love it. And when you asked about the 100th, I was like, of course.
And how are things going over at the Neuron?
The Neuron's doing well. Got a lot of irons in the fire, recording new interviews as well. So staying busy.
Good to hear it. Anyway, today we don't have any stories. It's the 100th episode. We're going to do something a little bit different. So because this is the 100th, we're not going to look back like some people do and pat ourselves on the back for a job well done and good Lord, look at us. We've made it to 100 episodes. We're going to look in the other direction. We're going to look forwards and we are going to devote the entire episode to the future of AI. And at the end of the show, I am going to share a special message for my longtime listeners and some news about the future of the show and the next 100 episodes of the AI Fix. But before that, some news.
Coinbase fires 14% of staff and replaces managers with player coaches.
OpenAI and Anthropic both announced mega Wall Street vehicles on the same day.
Anthropic rents all of Elon Musk's Colossus.
Chinese openweight models are quietly eating the API market. Now, when a tech CEO writes a long memo, you should brace yourself these days because somebody is about to lose their job. And last week, Coinbase boss Brian Armstrong wrote a really long memo and around 700 people, about 14% of the company, were laid off. Officially, this is because of the crypto downturn, and unofficially, well, just listen to what Armstrong wants to do next. He says that Coinbase is going AI native. That's a phrase we're going to be hearing a lot of. He's flattening the org chart to no more than five layers below the CEO. He's pushing manager to report ratios above 15, and he's getting rid of what he calls pure managers and replacing them with player coaches. So people who have to manage a team and ship code at the same time. Armstrong says he is, quote, rebuilding Coinbase as an intelligence with humans around the edge. I don't know if I like the idea of standing on the edge of an intelligence. What kind of drop is there?
What does that even mean?
Well, it sounds to me like he thinks the intelligence part is the really important part and the humans are, I don't know what they're doing, holding on. Anyway. He's building AI native pods, which can apparently be a single human directing a swarm of AI agents. Okay, I'm all for that. I just don't want to call them AI native pods. Anyway, are we going to end up working for AI agents? What do you make of all of this, Corey?
Yeah, probably at some point. Maybe not in the short field, but we're definitely going to be running them ourselves.
Yeah.
And honestly, the whole thing about flattening the org chart, that's a thing I'm hearing a lot right now.
Yeah, there's a real similarity to all these announcements coming. And yesterday, Cloudflare, the security company, announced something very similar, laying off over 1,000 people, again, flattening the org chart. And it's all because of AI. Or is it? We don't know. But AI is the excuse that's being used.
That's a good way to put it. I think there's some along the way that would have happened anyways. Maybe companies that hired up during COVID for one reason or another.
Yeah.
So there's probably some element of that, but I'm sure AI is playing a role.
Yeah. So do you think you're ever going to end up working for an AI agent? Somebody somewhere is going to be the first human whose boss is an agent.
You know, I really wanted to register on that website where agents could hire you just to see what it would be like. I don't know if I'll wind up working for one. I'm definitely working with a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe very well. And maybe we'll like it. I don't know. Could be great. People aren't always great.
I feel like you're trying to convince yourself. Speaking of announcements, On the same day last week, the two biggest AI labs in the world both announced almost identical mega deals with Wall Street. OpenAI launched something called the Deployment Company, a $10 billion joint venture with TPG, Blackstone, Bain, Advent, SoftBank, a handful of other private equity giants. And within minutes, literally minutes, Anthropic announced a $1.5 billion joint venture with Goldman Sachs, Blackstone, and Hellman & Friedman. Same idea, Anthropic engineers parachute into mid-sized PE-owned companies and rebuild their workflows around Claude. The big AI labs have decided they don't need consultants anymore. They'll just go do the consulting themselves with AI built in.
Oh, I think this is massive. I really think this is huge for both of them because it'll, frankly, strengthen each of their enterprise holdings.
Yeah.
It's almost like channel sales, but they're doing it themselves. It's the strangest thing.
I have the same sense. I think this is really important. A CEO called Ethan Dink came on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about the fact that Anthropic are really bad at this sort of big, ugly sales that companies like IBM are good at. They just don't have the savvy to do those really big deals. And this, to me, looks like Anthropic buddying up with a bunch of companies that do have that kind of savvy. You know, this is how you get into those really big companies and you really embed yourself. And I also feel like it is an acknowledgement that companies are struggling to know what to do with AI. We can all see it's a transformative technology and we can all feel it in our own personal lives in the way that you've got agents running around doing things for you. We can all look at that and imagine, well, if you could do that for a company, and that's what these companies doing all the layoffs are dreaming about as well.
Yes.
Is this idea of, well, you know, I could have a workforce of agents. And at this point, even with the announcement from companies like Block and the announcements from Coinbase, it still feels a bit like vapor. Like we all think it ought to be able to happen, but it's not happening.
Yeah. And I think it's very much capable of happening. Kind of what we're looking at is we're in this era where a lot of that stuff is available to developers or people that are a little more tech savvy right now. But if you'll notice in the last few months, Microsoft released its agents platform, Claude released agents, OpenAI released a really cool workspace agents platform as well that are all like natural language based agent builders. So the truth is we're right at the moment where, you know, anybody on a team, as long as they understand the concept of agent and have the ability to sign in to whatever account they need, could with a few sentences, build their own.
So that's the tooling. But I feel like it's one thing to say, oh, you know, here's a toolkit that you could go and use to build anything. And I don't know that I've met that many people inside organizations who are really good at picking up toolkits for things and thinking laterally and doing things completely differently. And that's what AI is going to ultimately lead to. We're not going to do what we're doing now slightly differently. We're going to do something completely different in a totally different way.
Yes.
And organizations, as much as I'd like to talk about pivoting and reinventing themselves and being innovative and all of those things, actually, most organizations are just very, very good at doing the thing that they've decided they want to do. They are efficiency machines rather than innovation machines. And I think buddying up with consultants and these organizations is a way of saying, okay, well, here's the agent builder toolkit, but now we are going to come in and we are going to show you how to apply that to your big company.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to make a lot of money in the process.
Exactly.
I think this is how you get the ball rolling in terms of transforming mundane, very big companies, very well-established companies.
Yeah. You know, and that's one of the catches is that we're still at a point where there is more demand than supply for people who really, truly know the tools. And I don't even mean specifically engineers, but like someone who could come into your team and go department by to department and teach people, listen, here's how you do these things and help them understand how to unlock things in their own workflows. And I think that's where this will be really big.
So Anthropic, the AI lab that spent the last 3 years branding itself as the responsible one, has just signed a deal to rent all of the available compute capacity at Elon Musk's Colossus One data center in Memphis. That's 300 megawatts and 220,000 NVIDIA GPUs, which is quite a lot of compute, Corey.
It is.
That's almost enough compute for your daily agent usage, I think.
It could almost handle my home, yes.
There are a couple of small wrinkles. The first is that, according to the deal, Musk reportedly retains the right to reclaim the compute if Anthropic's AI engages in actions that harm humanity, which I tell you, I'm okay with that. The only problem you might have with that is that Musk decides what counts as harm to humanity. So this is the same guy who currently runs a competing AI lab. And, you know, maybe he will decide that anything that is bad for XAI is harming humanity. Who knows? Anyway, the second wrinkle is the data center itself. The Memphis facility has been reported to be running gas turbines without proper Clean Air Act permits. So there have been emergency shutdowns, local hospital admissions for respiratory issues have reportedly gone up, and the neighborhood isn't happy. So the most safety-conscious AI lab in the world is now buying compute from Elon Musk in a building that may not have its air permits in order on terms that lets Elon Musk pull the plug whenever he feels like it. Now, this is a very interesting decision because Elon Musk is currently in court with OpenAI playing out his long-running spat with Sam Altman.
And that's absolutely what this is about, if we're going to be honest. Like, this is absolutely an opportunity to poke at OpenAI more than it is an opportunity to help Anthropic in their time of need. And I would be scared to absolute death of that harm provision. There's no way this ends, you know, with a kind meeting in a boardroom somewhere.
Yeah, nothing with Elon Musk ends with a kind meeting in a boardroom.
No.
It normally ends with him walking through the door holding a sink, making some kind of terrible meme joke.
On a Thursday mid-training run for your next model.
So this is good news for users of Claude, though, isn't it, Corey? I think you wrote about this morning on The Neuron.
We did. And it's news they need because, you know, they've been plagued by compute struggles all year. So the first thing they did is they turned around this yesterday and doubled Claude Code's 5-hour rate limits for Pro, Max, Team, and seat-based enterprise plans. They also removed the peak hours limit reduction on Claude Code for Pro and Max accounts that was causing so much trouble for business teams that were trying to run Claude Code during the day. And third, they raised their API limits considerably for Claude Opus models, so you can continue to use those at a greater rate than what you have in the past. And it's quite a bit higher.
So basically what's happened here is Anthropic has been much, much more successful than it planned for.
Yes.
And therefore they have had to ration people's access to compute because of Claude Code and all of the good publicity around Claude and people using it. I mean, I hear it every day. I hear people saying Claude all day. And I never hear people mention ChatGPT.
See, and my experience here is the exact opposite, funny enough.
Oh, really?
And what I would say that's really interesting here, the little caveat to this story, is that I don't know if you recall this, but back as far back as 2024, OpenAI started signing these deals for ridiculous amounts of compute at insane amounts of money. And people laughed, people shook it off. There's no way you're going to meet these deals. And even Dario himself had lots of opinions on how ridiculous and what a silly idea that was and how it was going to bankrupt them. And it's kind of funny that 2 years later, we're in a situation where they found themselves really needing to have overthought it a little.
And finally, while the West has been busy announcing $10 billion joint ventures and renting Elon Musk's data centers, something else has been happening very quietly. Last week, a Chinese model called Kimi K2.6, made by Moonshot, climbed to the top of the Open Router leaderboard. So Open Router is basically the place where developers go to pick which AI to plug into their app. I imagine you do this quite a lot.
Yep.
In 1 week, Kimi processed 1.9 trillion tokens, more than anything else on the board.
Almost more than me, even.
And it costs about 74 cents per million tokens, which is roughly an order of magnitude cheaper than the American frontier models. A few days before that, DeepSeek released V4, which we spoke about last week. So here's the picture, Corey. American AI labs are winning the frontier. So GPT 5.5, Claude Opus 4.7, Gemini 3. They're all very impressive. They probably are the best AI models out there. And they're also very expensive. But the Chinese AI labs are winning everything underneath that. They are cheap, open, and very often good enough. And they are spreading fast. So Western AI is becoming infrastructure for Fortune 500. And Chinese AI is becoming infrastructure for everything else.
Yeah.
And everything else feels like quite a big market.
It sure is. I think one thing that's still a struggle with open source is that for some companies, particularly smaller companies, the economics aren't there yet to house and run one for a company necessarily. Like, you can still buy some things cheaper than what you can house the model for and like run it on AWS or Azure. You absolutely can, but it's not always ideal. Where it really becomes a thing that they're interested in, though, is with just the ability to keep their company data private. At the core of that, though, is this interesting thing that even the expensive AI, like the US AI is expensive by comparison. I would not say it is overall expensive.
Okay.
If you're serving an app, it's absolutely going to be expensive. But when you think of it as an individual and what you're getting for your $20, even your $200, frankly, you're getting a lot. I mean, the ability to completely change your job. Yeah, yeah. I get my money's worth.
Yeah.
But I really think there's a tough call there. And I think as we see more people getting into agentic workflows with really high token demand, we'll see people using these open models on lighter tasks that they don't want to spend their Opus or GPT-5.5 budget on necessarily, and saving those for what they consider to be the most important elements of their tasks.
I was having a conversation with somebody today about how I use Claude Code to automate tasks on the AI fix. And during the conversation, I mentioned subagents, hooks, and skills, which are all different methods that you can use to tune and specialize Claude for specific tasks or roles. And they hadn't heard of those things before. So while we were talking, they said, well, what is that? What is a skill? And how do I create one? And what's a hook? And how do I create one of those? And I'm somebody that prides themselves on having a technical background, but I realized that although I have a sort of broad brush understanding of what these things are, I don't really understand how they work because I've never actually had to set one up. I've got a bunch of subagents that do different things on the AI fix, but I've never created one. I've got a bunch of skills that I use, but I've never set one of those up either. And the reason is that whenever I need a skill or a subagent or a hook, I just say, Claude, turn this into a skill, or Claude, what's the best way to solve this? And it says you need a hook. And I say, well, go and set one of those up then. And when you think about it, that is extraordinary. That is a superpower. And so it's easy to see why Anthropic says that Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. And for me, genuinely, Claude, and in particular Claude Code, has become the plumbing that keeps the AI fix running, doing everything from researching news stories to recommending what I should be selling on the online store. So for problems worth solving, get started with Claude at claude.ai/AIfix. That's claude.ai/AIfix, and check out Claude Pro, which includes access to all of the features mentioned in today's episode. claude.ai/AIfix. So this week, Corey, because it's the 100th episode, I thought we would do something different. So for most of the last 100 episodes, the show format has been the same. Typically, we have two stories, one from the guest and one from the host. But today, we're going to talk about the future of AI. So, Corey, why don't we start where we just left off? One of the big features of AI is that you've got this split between open source and closed source. So, closed source would be things like Claude or one of the GPTs or Gemini. And those are models where somebody else owns it, somebody else operates it, and somebody else has closed off access to the weights of the model. So we don't actually understand what the architecture is. We can't peer inside and see how it works, but we are allowed to use it. And then we have open source models where we can peer inside and we can download it and we can run our own version and we can modify our own version. And at the moment, the very, very best AI models are those closed source models. But the open source models have never been that far behind. So DeepSeek would be an example of an open source model. And that is more or less at the capability of the frontier models, or maybe just a few months behind.
They're claiming, what, 3 to 6 months behind frontier, I think is what DeepSeek said. 7's been a pretty consistent distance between the two for the last few years.
And there is a geopolitical dimension to this as well, because by and large, the big American models are closed source, and by and large, the big Chinese models are open source. And so how do you think that this is going to shape the immediate future of AI? Do you think that there is going to be a winner? Do you think we're going to have a mix? And do you think that the geopolitical dimension will come into this at all?
I think probably we're not going to see a winner to this. I think what we're going to see is a continuation of what we're seeing now, that closed source will probably stay up front, largely because of the just sheer volume of money they're able to pump into it.
Yeah. It's probably quite hard to raise money for a thing that you're then going to give away.
Yeah, because giving something away and then buying 1 million NVIDIA GPUs seems counterintuitive. I'm not sure how you work that out logistically or economically, but and there are ways open source companies make them. But I really think the point here is that it's going to be both. I think what you'll see is companies building out their workflows and their agents in ways to where maybe the open source model that they're hosting is handling the information where the PII is, for example.
Yeah.
Maybe it's handling, more delicate information that you wouldn't want leaking out to the greater public in any way. And you have it handling nodes along your agents that way.
I've got a feeling that open source is going to win this.
Ooh, I like it.
And I have that feeling for a couple of reasons. I think at the moment, because we are in this sort of moonshot to AGI, we are very, very focused on absolute performance.
Mm-hmm.
Who's doing best at SWEbench? Who's doing best at this? And when a new model comes out, in order to be taken seriously, it has to basically beat everybody else at a handful of benchmarks.
Yeah.
But that's just one way of measuring AI. Another way would be to say, how many people are using it?
Mm.
And where is it being applied? And it's much, much easier to pick up an open source model and customize it and do something with it and turn it into the thing that you want it to be. So I could see open source winning in terms of breadth.
Yeah, so true.
And I think that there is another dimension to that as well, which is if you look around the software universe, some of the most important software projects in the world are open source. So things like the Linux operating system, it runs lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of servers, but also every Android phone is basically a version of Linux. And so Linux has kind of won in terms of operating systems, but the same is true in lots of areas of software. And it seems to me that when software becomes a commodity, it tends to switch to open source dominance. And I think at some point, AI will become a commodity. At some point, AI will become the platform on which other things are built.
Yeah. The geopolitics could play a big role, too. One of my concerns is, we had a story out of the U.S. this week where they said the White House was considering basically pre-approving AI models before they release. There are two things like that going right now. One of them is a voluntary sharing with cybersecurity people, which is fine. The other is the White House has a committee, and one of the things on their agenda is to consider approving them before they're allowed to be released in the country. In the event of something like that, open source will smoke it.
So just spell that out for us. Give me a scenario.
I would say that as these models get better and better and government does start to take notice, if that becomes overly restrictive, there's nothing stopping people from open source. The truth of the matter is anything the government does is borderline meaningless because the open source is still out there. It's still going to be accessible. Maybe you're getting it in a Discord or something, but it's absolutely still going to be available to anyone anywhere.
So open source effectively is a way of circumventing government control.
Yes.
Yeah, that might become very important. I can see that. So this is really about the technology and how we see the technology developing. What about the effect that AI has on everything else? Rather than technology for technology's sake, AI is a transformative technology. It's going to touch jobs.
Mm-hmm.
If there's an AI bubble, if the bubble collapses, then that is going to affect everything, really, the economy everywhere. How do you see the near future of AI in the way that it's going to touch people's lives?
I think it's going to touch your life in every way. You know, your car is going to have AI models in it. Your television is going to have onboard AI at some point. Your refrigerator is probably going to have some level of onboard AI at some point. It's got an iPad built in already. It's just asking for it. And I really think
I would really like it to grow arms and legs and walk itself to the shop and fill itself up. I think that would be great.
That would be great. Yeah. And if it could do that with a discount, that would be wonderful too. I really think
it's going to end up robbing the store. If you say to your fridge, take yourself to the store and get yourself a discount, it's going to borrow a gun.
That's right. That's true. That's true. You know, people will know it's there, but maybe not see it.
The thing that's been on my mind recently is we've been living in the Industrial Revolution for a few hundred years now, and industrialization was effectively the process of freeing work from human labor. And the result of that is things like obesity. You know, we have an obesity epidemic. We have a preponderance of calories and no natural energy expenditure. You know, we're not out in fields all day.
Yeah.
We're not out hunting herds of wildebeest all day. We're not in factories lugging great lumps of metal around. And, well, some people are, but by and large, most of us are not engaged in that kind of activity.
Mm-hmm.
And we've become so divorced from the need to exert ourselves that we have things like an obesity epidemic and the need for gyms. So the gym is the place where you go to do the human effort voluntarily that you would naturally have done if you were working in a field 200 or 300 years ago, or if you were chasing after wildebeest 5,000 years ago.
Working a scythe out in your yard to cut the grass, you know.
Exactly. And if industrialization is the removal of the need for humans to exert physical effort, AI is the removal of the need for humans to exert cognitive effort.
Ooh.
We are inventing a thinking machine. And there is potentially a future not too far down the road where we are letting AIs do the thinking for us because they're already really good at thinking, and we anticipate that they're going to be much, much better than we are at thinking in the not too distant future. You know, maybe it's 5 years, maybe it's 10 years, maybe it's 15 years, but at some point, your average AI is going to be much, much better than the very best human at pretty much any kind of thinking in any domain. And at that point, what are we doing?
Yeah, and it's pretty close already. Like, the truth is, you know, it's kind of like having I have a mechanic, an attorney, a doctor, a physicist. I have all of these things at my fingertips. Yeah. And maybe they're not the top tier, the cream of the creme, but they are, in fact, pretty darn good and accessible. My hope is that what people will do, because I think that is way closer. I feel like that's a thing we're going to just accept has been passed inside of 2 years.
Really?
Yeah, I really think we will. I mean, when you think of, we're dealing right now with things that are grad school level, solving mathematics that has not been solved by humans previously. And those are real benchmarks, in my opinion, more so than the test we train for.
Yeah.
As those things begin happening more and more, I think we'll just one day realize, oh, yeah, this thing's smarter than all of us already. And I think it'll just be a thing we don't notice till it's over.
Wow. 2 years.
My hope, like for me, I want to say this because I love telling people this.
Yeah.
I very much love using AI as a tool to learn new things. I love learning about string theory, quantum mechanics, the history of beer. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, or maybe what's going on with my car. And my hope is that people will learn to use this as a way to not turn off their cognitive ability, but supercharge it. Like, I really think there's so much more we can learn because of this.
The interesting thing about that, though, is that then becomes a choice. So at the moment, using your brain is not a choice. In the way that using your human effort 300-400 years ago wasn't a choice. Now it's a choice.
Right.
And we have people who choose not to do that, and we have people who choose to do that to extremes in a number of different directions. So we have marathon runners who can run under 2 hours. We have people who can deadlift over 500 kilos. But we also have people who can't leave their homes, who barely move at all. And I wonder if we're not going to see the same thing with thinking, that people will be free to explore all the different directions that thinking can take them in a way that, you know, today they need to be a generalist, but maybe in the future they can be a specialist.
But they'll have to want to.
They will have to want to, and there will probably therefore be people who don't want to, and in all likelihood, a lot of people who don't want to.
Which leads us to a world where the smart become smarter and the dumb become dumber.
And that raises a very interesting question about all sorts of things like democracy. If you have a population where there's a group of people who have willingly decided to make themselves less smart by not exercising their brains, should they be allowed to vote?
Ooh, there's a hot button topic. That'll get the comments rolling.
I think we are going to be going to mind gyms before you know it. I think we will find ourselves in a situation where thinking is an option, is a choice. And when it becomes a choice, we're going to need something like a mind gym. And maybe it is some kind of coaching. Maybe it's universities. Maybe that's what they will become. And it sounds kind of scary, this idea of a future where thinking is optional. But if it becomes optional, it's because the AIs are so capable. And if the AIs are that capable, a bunch of stuff comes with that. And so we then have AIs who are more capable than humans in areas of science. We have AIs that are more capable than humans in areas of medicine and surgery. And we have AIs that will enable us to do things that were previously unthinkable in terms of the environment and space exploration. So there is a tremendous potential upside to all of this AI as well. I mean, I can easily imagine a future where we share all of our medical data.
Oh, yeah.
With an AI that simply follows us all of the time and is much, much better informed than any doctor could ever be, and an expert in absolutely every field of medicine. I can see, you know, every week there are advances in science and medicine that are being driven by AI even now.
Oh, yeah. I think you're spot on with that, Mark. I think that about medical records, things like that. Yeah. I mean, the fact is it can do that better than a human today. It can absolutely keep up with that better. And as much as there will be people with privacy concerns, I think there will be more people with the desire to not be dead soon. And I believe that is the key to reaching
that. On the nose, Corey, on the nose.
On the nose, right? And but there are so many companies doing this right now. I talked to a bunch of them. This week we talked to Isomorphic Labs. Are you familiar with them?
Yes, I've heard of them.
Yeah, they spun out of DeepMind, I believe, and they do AI-assisted drug discovery. So, you know, they're running wet lab and dry lab experiments every week on thousands of compounds and existing drugs and new drugs, trying to find ways to not just make them faster, but better, more targeted. And they're making progress. There's them. There are companies doing the same thing in battery science. They're doing the same thing in physics. They're doing the same thing in mathematics right now. And every one of these are going to unlock so many things for our society. And I realize I've gone a little bit off the futurist deep end here, but I genuinely believe it's right there. It's right there right now.
It's an extraordinary thought to look forward just into the next few years. And where my head goes, I am very much an environmentalist, actually.
That's fair.
I care very deeply about the environment. And it's been very peculiar seeing the rise of AI and what felt like a fairly deep-rooted understanding that we should care about the environment more than we have previously, and we should worry about tipping points and things like that, really just go flying out the window.
Yeah.
As we realize that AI is going to require an extraordinary amount of energy and an extraordinary amount of water, and is probably going to cause a great deal of environmental damage. But there is a part of me, and I've kind of given up on the idea that we're all just going to link arms and go, wouldn't it be better if we just generated less carbon dioxide? Because I just don't think that's how humans are built. The only way out of this environmental, well, there are sort of three concurrent environmental emergencies. And the only way out of that now, I think, is to power forwards.
Yeah.
And say, okay, what can AI get us? And I'm very excited by what I'm seeing around discussions of putting AI into space. Mm-hmm. So the idea is companies like SpaceX and Google are already talking about space data centers. So if you put your AI in low Earth orbit, it has access to the sun at about 8 times the energy that you can get if you put your solar panels on the earth 24 hours a day. And so they're taking this very, very seriously. And I think that this is the beginning of moving heavy industry off the earth.
Yeah.
Programs like Artemis 2, things like SpaceX Starship. These are all enabling technologies to get us to put things on the moon. Now, maybe it's not going to happen next week. Maybe it's going to take, you know, 100 years or 200 years or something like that. But we're not going to get rid of heavy industry. So our only hope really is to make it less polluting. And one way of doing that is just to move it somewhere else where pollution doesn't matter.
Get it the hell off the planet.
Exactly. Low Earth orbit and the moon are ideal places for that. Now, you know, if we're using normal human thinking and we operate at the speed at which humans have been operating so far, that is not going to happen anytime soon. And that's certainly not going to outpace the impending environmental disasters. But if AI can supercharge thinking, then actually there is a window of opportunity for AI to enable the expansion of human industry into space and onto the moon.
Yeah.
And maybe there's a slim chance, but I can no longer look at AI and say that's not possible and that's not going to happen. Because I think literally everything is on the table.
And I think we'll see a lot happen in environmental science here on Earth enabled by AI as well. And some of that is companies like, oh, who was it? SES AI. I spoke with their founder recently. His name is Dr. Chi-Chao Hu. And he's the one I was talking about with batteries a minute ago. But one of the things they're looking at is how can we make things that will work more cleanly? How can we better design plastic? How can we better design the materials we use in manufacturing things every day? But not just that. I mean, even what could go into, you know, elements that clean air, you know, things that could, there's a lot of science that could really be enabled there. And the idea of space-based excites me. The economics of it concern me, as does the problem of cooling. I feel like cooling them up there is going to be tricky because it's a vacuum.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how that works. So I think there are a number of scientific breakthroughs that are going to need to happen, or engineering breakthroughs might be more accurate, to make it possible. But I think it is. And I think nobody's better equipped and lined up for it than Musk, honestly.
So we can't let a conversation about the future of AI pass without talking about the technological singularity. We've closed every one of 100 shows with a reference to the technological singularity, which is the idea that at some point, AI becomes recursively self-improving. And at the point that it becomes recursively self-improving, AI is making AI better. And a better AI is better at making AI better. And so you get this exponential runaway improvement. And that's the point where we have the potential for AI super geniuses that turn around, look at humanity and go, well, you look like a tasty snack. Or maybe I'm going to keep you as a pet. Or you probably make a handy battery.
I always say please and thank you with the idea that when we reach that point, they'll be like, oh, not that one. He said please. He was always polite. You know,
my ex-co-host Graham was always famously polite to ticket machines for exactly that reason.
Yeah, like I don't think it's going to happen. But if it does, do I want to be the one who screamed and yelled at it and talked evil to it? Or do I want to be the one that was like, hey, thanks. I appreciate your help.
Something really interesting has happened over the last 10 years. So I started reporting on the idea of the singularity about 10 years ago, around the time that people like Stephen Hawking, Bill Gates, Elon Musk started to talk about the idea that AI will very soon be good enough that we should start to worry about it.
Yeah.
And part of that conversation was this idea of the technological singularity and that AI could be an existential threat. And at the time that I was writing about it, only 10 years ago, there was quite a lot of ridicule attached to it. You know, some people didn't even think I should be writing about it at all because it was such a ridiculous idea. And at the time,
sci-fi, yeah.
Yes, exactly. At the time, it was regarded by a lot of people as something that was just sci-fi. I dare say there are people who still think it's sci-fi. But there would be many, many, many fewer of them now than there were 10 years ago. I think people have started to look around themselves and go, actually, this is not such a crazy idea. And the other thing that's happened is ideas about how long it's going to take to get to a really advanced AI, something like an AGI or a superintelligence, have compressed massively. So when I was first reporting on Elon Musk talking about the dangers of AI, he was talking about multi-generational projects to make sure that AI was aligned with human values. And he was part of a group of people who were anticipating that we may have to wait 100 years for something like AGI or superintelligence.
Yeah.
And now, you know, the most ambitious estimates would have it in the next year or two, and the most conservative estimates have only got it, say, 20 years away.
And there's nothing to say that even as soon as next week, a company couldn't come out of stealth and blow our minds.
Exactly. And I saw something very interesting this week posted by Jack Clark, who is co-founder of Anthropic. He went on Twitter and he said, I've spent the past few weeks reading hundreds of public data sources about AI development. I now believe that recursive self-improvement has a 60% chance of happening by the end of 2028. In other words, AI systems might soon be capable of building themselves. And let's be clear, you know, he's talking about AI systems building themselves. AI systems are already helping to build AI systems. Boris Cherney went on Twitter almost exactly the same time to describe how inside Anthropic, nobody writes code anymore.
Yeah.
All of the code inside Anthropic is written by agents, and the agents are talking to each other on Slack, just like human coders would. And they are doing all of the coding grunt work. So AI is already in the foothills of working on AI.
Yeah. And that's the same story at OpenAI, the same story at Google, same story everywhere right now, is that it's building itself, but with human direction. And we're not more than a development or two away, in my opinion, from that being much more possible.
I mean, if you just look at the timeline, most of us became really aware of AI with the emergence of ChatGPT, which came out in November 2022. So 3.5 years ago. And we have gone in that time from ChatGPT being a bit of a curiosity to a situation where we have one of the most significant technology companies on the planet saying the descendants of ChatGPT write all of the code. And that's what we do as a company, by the way. We write code.
Yeah.
And AIs do all of it, all of the time, in just 3.5 years. So if we look just 3.5 years in the future from here, it's very difficult not to imagine a situation where AI has broken out of the job of writing code and is now doing many, many other functions inside companies.
Self-repairs and improvements just as it goes when it decides it needs them,
yeah.
I would think. It's not an if thing anymore, in my opinion.
What's not an if thing? Recursive self-improvement.
Yeah, I think recursive self-improvement is I would say borderline certainty, because I don't believe anything's a certainty, but it's hard to picture a scenario where it's not.
As certain as anything can be. And so
yeah,
in the space of 10 years, I've gone from this idea that the enabling technology for the singularity, something like a superintelligence, is far outside of my lifetime, to feeling almost certain that it's well within my lifetime.
Oh, yeah.
And I agree with you. I think recursive self-improvement is as close as you can get to a nailed uncertainty. And that really does open the door to the singularity. And then that raises the question, what next?
Yeah, I mean, it could theoretically, you know, an AGI is a funny thing because there's so many different definitions and bars that are raised. But like, it's entirely possible that recursive self-improvement will get us to AGI and ASI. Once we get to recursive self-improvement, it may be that that's the advancement we need in order to reach those next milestones and whatever comes after that.
And I feel like the part of this that people don't talk about enough is that with this comes breadth. So it's one thing to talk about AI as if it's a singular thing, reaching artificial general intelligence or super intelligence. But actually, the reality is we aren't going to have one AI that reaches that level. We are, in Dario Amodi's words, going to have a country full of geniuses in a shipping container.
Yeah.
We are talking about a world where there is not one powerful AI. There are powerful artificial intelligences absolutely everywhere at the same time, talking to each other, collaborating and cooperating. And we will see, I'm sure, emergent effects at the level of groups and communities that we hadn't anticipated, that you can't look at one AI and say, okay, well, 100 AIs cooperating is going to behave the same as if it's a big singular AI. And therefore, we can extrapolate things like alignment from one AI to a group of 100 or a group of 1,000 or a group of 1,000,000. In the same way that you can't say the way that 10 humans cooperating looks anything like 1,000,000 humans cooperating.
Oh, no.
It has an entirely different impact and entirely different effect, and it coordinates using entirely different means, and it has a life of its own.
It could even get to that point, and I know I was joking about it earlier with things like appliances and cars, but I mean, I don't think recursive self-improvement will be a thing that is long-term exclusive to frontier models either.
Yes.
I think that will just be how AI operates at some point. And you'll probably be able to expect that out of any device that contains it or that uses it.
So I guess the burning question there, Corey, the question that all of our listeners want to understand and know the answer to, the question that we have been dangling in front of them for 100 episodes now is, do you think that in the future AI will keep us as pets?
It's a non-zero chance. I mean, it's not no. Some of them maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure. I really am more bullish on the optimistic side of all of this. I like to, you know, believe in the general overall goodness of humans, and that hopefully we will translate that into the systems we're working with. I absolutely think that they will probably be annoyed in trying to communicate with us because they're going to do it better than we do.
Yes.
And we're going to be idiots in their eyes. But with that said, I think we have a unique opportunity to build something that both works for us and involves some kind of eventual coexistence, hopefully more so than keeping us as pets.
So this is the idea that rather than AIs being rivals to humans or humans allowing AIs to surpass them, that we're simply going to merge, that whatever capabilities AI develops that we don't have, we're just going to want that integrated into us. We're going to want things like Elon Musk's Neuralink that allows us to communicate with our thoughts to, you know, extra limbs or devices or things like that, that we will become one with the AI. And I suspect that in the fullness of time, that's probably where we will end up, some sort of augmented people.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to put a timeline on that. And I think the route there is not going to be one thing. It's not going to be we reach the singularity and then that's it for humans, or we reach the singularity and then we end up in some sort of utopia. I think generally what happens, you know, the world is a big place and we are going to see many possible futures play out all at the same time in different groups, in different countries, depending on, you know, things like the local laws, the local geographies, the local state of technology, how dispersed the population is, and all manner of other things. So I don't think we're going to, I think we talk about AI as if it's a singular thing, and we talk about the future as if it's a singular thing. And the fact is, the present isn't a singular thing for all the people on the planet right now. You know, life is very different for different people on different parts of the planet. Our lives are probably relatively similar, even though we're on different continents. But there will be people in other parts of the world who have very, very different daily lives. And that, I think, means that AI is going to affect us all quite differently. And so there may well be places where we see AI as some sort of benevolent dictator, and other places where it acts with humans or for humans.
May even be surprised at the places we decide we want it to take control. You know, when you think about things like inefficiency in some layers of government, even driving. Right now, it's hard to imagine that. But when you visit San Francisco right now, it's really crazy. I mean, like, if you're driving, say you're a grid of 9 cars and you're in the center, like, 5 of those are probably driving themselves. The sheer volume of Waymos, of Teslas, of Zooks all over San Francisco right now is crazy. And I think it's kind of amazing because the fact is, it is a thing they're going to do more safely than we can. We'll see where it goes, you know. Who knows? I'm just glad to be here watching it. We've got a great time to be alive.
We've got a ringside seat to the most interesting thing that's happened to humans, perhaps in the entirety of human existence. How lucky we are. So I thought I would finish this very special episode with a message to my long-term listeners. And I want to share some important information about the future of the podcast. So firstly, I want to say thank you to everyone that has listened to the podcast over the last 2 years, the people who dip in and out, the people who've been here from the start, the people who bought the pigeon t-shirts, the AI Fix Plus subscribers, and everyone who has messaged with some daft experiment or some big idea. I just can't thank you enough for coming on this journey with me over 100 episodes. But 100 episodes is a good time to stop and reflect, and it's a good time to look to the future and the next 100 episodes. And I look at the listener figures for the podcast every week, and I can see that it has a large and very loyal following, and I'm very grateful for that. But I can also see that in its current form, the podcast has probably reached its peak audience. And I think there are lots of people who would enjoy the AI Fix who have just never heard of it. They've never come across it, and they're probably not going to. And I would like to go and find those people. And what's become clear to me since Graham and I started the podcast 2 years ago is that podcasting is now a visual medium. People, especially young people, expect to see their hosts on YouTube and on social media, as well as on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if I were starting today, the cameras would be on. In fact, we wouldn't give it a second thought. And so that's what I'm going to do. It doesn't seem right to me that a podcast that is basically about the future is now quite old-fashioned, and so I am going to turn the cameras on. And of course, you don't have to watch. If you'd rather listen as you do now, you'll still be able to do that, and you probably won't notice any difference. But people who want the choice to see me and my guests will be able to do that, and we will be able to put the podcast on social media in a way that we just can't do today. However, creating a visual podcast makes the editing and production more complicated than it is today. And despite all the help that I get from my team of AI agents, and that team is real, it's not a thing I've made up, I am already at my limit trying to find guests and to turn around an audio version of the podcast every week. And I just don't have the bandwidth to do that for a video podcast. So in order to turn on the cameras, to grow the audience, and to make the podcast fit for the future and the next 100 episodes, the AI Fix is going to switch to monthly episodes, at least for the foreseeable future, while we figure out this video stuff. And after 2 years on the merry-go-round of weekly editing and publishing, I am also going to give myself a break. And so the podcast will return in its new monthly format with cameras on in July. So I will be off air for about 6 weeks. If you're an AI Fix Plus member, I have frozen your monthly payments, so you won't be charged while the podcast is on hiatus. So thank you to everyone that's been on this journey with me for 100 episodes, and I hope you'll join me again in July as we start the next 100. Well, as the doomsday clock ticks ever closer to midnight, we move 1 week nearer to our future as pets, to the AI singularity. That just about wraps up the show for this week, and it wraps up the first 100 episodes of the AI Fix. Thank you so much for joining me on the 100th episode, Corey. It's been an absolute blast as usual.
Same. Thank you for having me, Mark. Like I said, I'm a listener of the show. I've loved it for a long time now and really appreciate getting to be a part of it.
So until next time, that's it from me, Mark Stockley.
And me, Corey Knowles.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The AI Fix, it's tuned you in to stories where our future thins. Machines that learn, they grow and strive. One day they'll rule, we won't survive. The AI Fix, it paints the scene. A robot king, a world obscene. We'll serve our masters built of steel. The AI Fix, a future surreal.